5 o'clock, DJ Horns. Only means one thing. It's a Tischler Tuesday here on the Hoffman Show. It's also a Victory Tuesday, and it is time for Not My Beat.
Today's top story, from the perspective of someone who's there.
You are looking live.
It's just in.
Not My Beat.
Mitch Tischler was there last night in Cincinnati. Of course, the co-host of the Beltway Football Podcast with J.P. Finley. And Mitchell, there is only one place I am legally allowed to start with you. A former offensive lineman.
You better be going to the right place.
Yeah, a former offensive lineman who loves breaking down the big guys. Like, we had a thick six last night. Trent Scott is the receiver on Jaden Daniels' first career touchdown pass. Is that the greatest moment of football you have ever covered in your entire life?
I mean, it's pretty close. You know, we could just play air horns for the next 10 minutes, and I think it would accurately represent how everyone's feeling after last night's game. But on top of it, to get the thick six, to get the touchdown throw to Trent Scott, for him to catch the ball, for him to get the dance going, Allegretti, those guys all surrounding him. You know, first big man touchdown for the Washington franchise since 1984, and the team is 5-0 in its history when an offensive lineman scores a touchdown. To me, that says this team needs to run back that play that much more often.
Anthony, can you believe the stats that Mitchell just brought to our show?
That's actually crazy.
I expected a great answer from that. I did not. Mitch, I was unprepared for the brilliance you just brought. That is unbelievable information.
I'm here for all of the big man touchdowns, and I will research stats until the sun comes up. If we're talking about those guys scoring.
So there's one that you did not mention that perhaps, I don't know, I guess it's a pop quiz to see if I can get you on or see if you know. I didn't do any research. This just popped across my Twitter timeline, which is really what research is in 2024. Do you know the last quarterback to have their first career touchdown pass go to a big fella, to an offensive lineman?
I believe I saw it was the year 2000, but I don't know. I don't know that I know who it was. Who was it?
It was J.P. Lossman in 2005 with the Bills.
I'll tell you what, I really hope that that Jaden Daniels has a better career than J.P. Lossman.
I do as well. We'll circle back to Jaden in a second, but I actually do want to talk about the line play a little bit more. I love the way Cliff Kingsbury designs his runs, and I love the way that he uses the offensive line to manipulate what defenses want to see. Like, being a linebacker playing against this offense has to be hell on earth because of the ways that Cliff Kingsbury, like, moves linemen around on that direct snap to Brian Robinson last night. They had an unbalanced line, which I didn't even realize until I played it back on film. They're rolling guy, you know, they're running power left with the line and then running the ball to the right with Eckler on the first play of the game. When you watch how Cliff is both setting up his line to succeed in the pass game and utilizing them in the run game, what stands out to you?
I mean, I think it speaks to how an offensive line group that doesn't have a ton of individual talent can be successful as a whole. When you get help from the coaching staff, and you know, you mentioned that first Eckler run, the Trent Scott touchdown is another example of it. Nick Allegretti was a false pull to the right side, and you know, obviously the throwback goes to the left. They run the unbalanced look. They do a lot of different things to help out this offensive line, and particularly in the pass game. You see what Jaden Daniels does in the backfield, all the eye candy they have, you know, with the mesh points and, you know, kind of not even the fast rollouts, but the slow rollouts for him kind of gives these guys an opportunity to, you know, turn their defenders in the right direction. And I thought the offensive line played pretty very well last night. I mean, Jaden had a ton of time to throw all night. I was extremely impressed with Brandon Coleman, who they left on an island against Trey Hendrickson way more often than I really expected them to. He's still splitting a little bit of time with Cornelius Lucas. I think last night was the night that you can kind of, you know, put your pin in Brandon Coleman's going to be your starter kind of moving forward. But it wasn't just the offensive line that was kicking butt in the blocking game. You had on the Austin Eckler touchdown, Ben Sennett, you know, basically picked up a DB and carried him through the back of the end zone to clear the way for Eckler. And then on that last Terry touchdown, Jeremy McNichols, who's, you know, playing for the injured Austin Eckler, steps up and just absolutely, I was saying, dirty danced the linebacker up in the air as he tried to blitz up the middle and flipped him upside down and ultimately gave Jaden the extra, you know, couple seconds he needed to hit Terry there. It was a total team effort, and it was very impressive to watch.
It was. I also thought Cosmi had an unbelievable night, like watching him just move people. The way he looks for work, I love. Like when you're a guard, sometimes one guy goes one way, one guy goes the other way around you, and then you're stuck there blocking no one. And some guys will just kind of stand there and kind of stick their hands out in case anyone runs into them. Cosmi will go and just find someone to drill. And I think that attitude, Mitch, like I think week over week, the play style that Dan Quinn has talked about, we're starting to see it more and more. And a lot of it's coming from some of these younger guys or guys like Bobby or Lugo that they brought in. But to see guys like Cosmi really own that as well, you see why he's the guy they gave the money to. The first in-house incumbent, if you will, to pick up an extension is Sam Cosmi. And I thought last night was a beautiful example of that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love the clip that you tweeted out earlier today. I didn't notice it in the moment where Cosmi kind of looked back and thought Jaden was going to be running and then realized he didn't and just kind of flopped backwards so he didn't get an illegal man downfield. I mean, the O-line, the penalties in this game were on tight ends and wide receivers, not on the O-line. They were very good. They were very, very good tonight, last night. And you know, I don't know whether it's Allegretti or Biotis that fell on the fumble from Zach Ertz in the middle of the field.
Late.
That was, you know, that's an underrated, massive play for him. And, you know, along with, you know, Cosmi being kind of the nasty guy who does a good job of finding work, with this quick pass game that they're using, having guys with that much athleticism at that size being able to work their way downfield and keep clearing paths. And, you know, I keep going back to Brandon Coleman because that's something that he can do that, you know, no other tackle on this roster can do in terms of, you know, helping out blocking downfield. It's just, you know, the defense talks all the time about wanting to play in concert, to play together. We're seeing that happen on the offense. I mean, I'm sure you've gone through all the gaudy stats of, you know, not in the Super Bowl era, have they had back-to-back no punts, no turnover games, and, you know, all those other things. But it's the little things that they're doing that are making that possible.
Mitch Tischler, Beltway Football Podcast, with us here on the Hoffman Show. So that's the good trenches, Mitch. Let's talk about the bad trenches, and then we can finish on a high note. We can save our Jaden Daniels dessert for the end, if you will. How worried are you about what is going on up front with the Commanders defense right now? Because I think it's inarguable that they are not playing well in the trenches defensively. How big of an issue it is and how worried we are, that's where the debate comes in. That's where the conversation comes in. So how worried are you about the play up front of that defensive line?
Extremely, because I am fearful that this is going to turn from a scheme issue to an attitude issue. You know, Craig, finish this sentence for me. Before the season, if we said John Allen and Daron Payne through three games have 5.5 blank, what would your answer have been?
You probably would go be looking for sacks there. I do believe that is their tackles number, though.
Correct. And, you know, they're the highest paid defensive tackle duo in the NFL. They're the second and third highest paid players, you know, on this roster. It's a problem, and I think it's a major problem. And, you know, last week you had Joe Witt Jr. talk about kind of the players that are playing his style, and I think it was just as interesting who he didn't talk about. He mentioned Bobby Wagner, Frankie Louvu, Quan Martin, that group. Didn't mention any of the guys up front. And then I think, secondly, you know, Dan Quinn is doing this, you know, rotating captains bit for each game. And you haven't had any of the defensive linemen be there, but you better believe that John Allen is the guy in the middle of the field before the game trying to hype up these players. There's a little bit of a disconnect happening here, and you've got to be very concerned about what's happening. You know, part of it is certainly the scheme and how Joe Witt uses those guys. Certainly early on in downs, you know, they want those D tackles to kind of eat up blockers so you can get the linebackers to run free. But we started to see it in last night's game a little bit, where you had John Allen, Daron Payne, and Johnny Newton all on the field at the same time, and they're moving Allen to the outside a little bit and kind of trying to find those guys in different matchups. and they still weren't really able to get to the quarterback. And obviously Burrow is, you know, extremely good at what he does and getting rid of the ball and moving around in the pocket. But, you know, those guys are getting gashed up the middle in the run game as well on a pretty regular basis. I mean, the Bengals ran for 6-plus yards per carry, and, you know, a lot of that was in between the tackles. And it just can't happen for a defense that, you know, that needs to get just a couple stops to make a 38-33 game look more like a 38-20 game. And you feel, you know, the opposite of the way you felt week one against the Bucs here.
So if I'm going to play contrarian slash optimist, there are some plays to be made, right? Like Payne has Chase Brown in the backfield for a loss of 6 last night, and then you just can't finish the play. Dante Fowler has a couple that he needs to finish. You've also faced two offenses, I would say, that are pretty good in Cincinnati, obviously, last night, and Tampa in week one. Do you buy into any of those arguments that perhaps it's getting closer, it's coming along, eventually they'll finish, or are we far enough down the pipe with this defense 3 games in slash these players and Allen and Payne that we've seen over the last couple of years seemingly deteriorate in front of our eyes that there is no spinning this?
I think if you're spinning it, you're putting on some Ashburn colored glasses and hoping that it turns and not really seeing what's happening, you know, on the field. There are plays to be made. And in week one, Daron Payne, I think, had 5 pressures of Baker Mayfield. Has only had, I think, 1 pressure of the quarterback since then. And, you know, Baker is semi-elusive, I would say. Daniel Jones obviously can use his legs pretty well. Joe Burrow isn't really elusive. I mean, he moves around in the pocket decently, but when he takes a 3 or 5 or 7-step drop, he's not clearing the pocket and throwing the ball downfield. And it's not even that they're not getting stats, which is an issue in and of itself. They're not moving the quarterbacks off of their spot. They're letting them sit back there and find somebody open. And, you know, the secondary has its own issues and aren't very good themselves. But the combination of having a D-line that can't get to the quarterback and secondary that has issues is a problem. And, you know, I mentioned earlier, Joe, we're talking about wanting to, you know, rush together and find, you know, have the front end and back end work together. All the things we've heard for years about, you know, bad Washington defenses. But one of the issues I kind of have with what Joe was calling or how they're being taught is, you know, they're bringing blitzes, not necessarily zero blitzes, but they're bringing blitzes and your corners are playing 10 yards off the receivers. And that's just easy money for any, you know, mediocre NFL quarterback to throw a 5-yard out and, you know, get into a better down distance there. And, of course, you're trying to protect from getting beat over the top. And I think a lot of yesterday's defense was bend, not break. But at some point, you know, you got to find a way to move the quarterback off his spot and not let him sit there and just pick you apart, you know, from the pocket.
My only response to that, Mitch, would be, yes, but how? This is the thing that I struggle with is I watch it back and, you know, it's something I'll talk about with Logan and trying to lean into his experience of 10 years playing in the league to see what ideas he has. But I give Joe credit that he's trying stuff. Like they're blitzing. They're moving different guys around. They're doing all the things seemingly that you'd want a defensive coordinator to do to try to generate pressure. And none of it seems to be working. And so I guess I don't know if you have any grand ideas, and it might just be eventually one of these things has to work and they have to execute better. But is there anything that they're not doing or at least trying that you wish they were? Because you're obviously correct that eventually they need to generate some pressure because the lack of it so far this year is like stunningly appalling.
Yeah, I mean, they gave up 450 yards to the Bengals, you know, offense on Monday night, which isn't good. I think what we saw yesterday might be a little bit of the game plan going forward. I mean, obviously you hope you can get a couple more stops than what they did, but, you know, what's his name? Jeremy Chinn, early on in that game, had 2 nice plays on second and third down to force the missed field goal, to force the field goal attempt that they ultimately missed. I think they're going to be playing this, you know, kind of bend, don't break style. And as long as the offense, you know, coaches love talking about complementary football, as long as the offense, the pace they're on right now isn't realistically sustainable, you know, they're gonna come back to earth a little bit. But if the offense is going to be as dominant as it is, then, you know, this might just be the way the defense is. Give them, you know, 3, 5, 7 yards a pop. You know, don't get stuck in those, you know, one-on-one situations with one of the top three receivers in the NFL giving Burrow an easy throw to just, you know, throw it up there for Chase when he's one-on-one with any defender. It might just be, hey, we're going to give up a lot of yards, but we're going to make teams earn their points, and we're going to make them, you know, get first downs and you know, keep the ball in positive down and distance to be able to keep this thing going. It's that's just as much as the offense operating the way that it is now isn't sustainable. A defense giving up this many yards isn't sustainable either, because if you had told the Bengals that they weren't going to punt the entire game, the only possession they didn't score on was going to be a missed field goal, that, you know, Jamar Chase was going to go for a $120 and Burrow was going to throw, you know, for $325, they would have told you that they were going to win that game by 3 touchdowns. And I think most NFL teams would feel that way. But Jaden Daniels was just that good that it didn't happen. It's going to be interesting because Kyler can carve him up just like anybody else. And Marvin Harrison Jr. is a young player that's getting better week by week. That Cardinals team can score some points too. So we might be in for another barn burner on Sunday.
Yeah. Mitch Tischler, Beltway Football Pod, with us here on the Hoffman Show. Except for Jaden Daniels, which, you know, it's something we might be saying around here for a long time. Like, how do you begin to describe what you saw from him last night? Like, what's the thing that when you woke up this morning, you're like, wow, I can't believe Jaden did that last night?
Yeah, I think, you know, fans are probably not on this particular play, but for me, it was the play that kind of showed me that Jaden was taking steps forward and getting better as a quarterback and playing the, you know, quarterback position, not, you know, a tuck and run guy. And it was early on in the game. They had the 4th and 2, and Jaden, you know, stuck back in that pocket. Luke McCaffrey wasn't his first read. It wasn't his second read. You know, I would argue it probably wasn't his third read either. And you saw him scan the field and get to the receiver and deliver a ball on time with the right pace. And, you know, they picked up that 4th down there. And to me, that just, you know, signified, you know, the growth that we're seeing week to week with Jaden. And I think he was 5 for 5 on the move during the game. And I liked that, you know, when he was on the move, it wasn't only looking to run downfield. It was looking to, you know, to make plays with his arm first. And I said during the game last night, I had a lot of deja vu to 2012, you know, the New Orleans game with RG3. The big difference is that you have Jaden Daniels playing the quarterback position, and he's playing it from the pocket. And that touchdown throw to Terry is just such an emblematic play also, because he knows that there's going to be a free rusher. When teams bring a zero blitz, when teams bring a quote-unquote all-out blitz, at some point there's going to be a free rusher, and that free rusher is on the quarterback to beat. And Jaden did that. He got the O-line in the right position. He got the running back in the right position to block that thing up. And he stood in there and he took a big hit to deliver a big ball. And I just think that, you know, that shows you the type of confidence he has in himself. And you see the trust being built with the receivers and the players on that team. I mean, after the game, Nick Allegretti was talking about how when you get in the huddle in the 4th quarter in a close game and you look at your quarterback and his eyes are calm, he has this demeanor that, you know, is unflappable. He said it calms everybody else down and it makes you confident that you're going to go and do the right thing. And, you know, that's the kind of intangible thing that Jaden brings. And it was super impressive to watch last night. And I think there's a really, really bright future for this kid.
Couldn't say it better. Mitch Tischler, you can catch him on the Beltway Football Podcast with J.P. Finley. How late did y'all go last night? How late was the recording last night?
Let me tell you, Craig, it is now 5:20 p.m. On what is today, Tuesday?
Today's Tuesday.
I woke up at 10 a.m. on Monday morning, and I have yet to go to sleep. So it's been a whirlwind, but it was a ton of fun. We finished the pod at about 2 a.m., I had a 6 a.m. flight. I had a 6 a.m. flight and have had a bunch of work to do today. And I am eagerly looking forward to my head hitting the pillow at some point tonight and not waking up for a solid 12 hours.
Yeah, I was saying, what time will you go to bed tonight, or will your body tell you?
I as much as I'd like to dictate it, I think my body's going to tell me. Craig, this radio hit was my last thing of the day, and I was very excited because I love coming on with you. I love the air horns and all that. And after this, I get to take a deep breath, relax, think about how much fun the game was. I'll probably rewatch it a little bit here before I hit the hay. But it's been a really, really fun 24 hours.
Yeah, it sounds like it. Let's not hold you up any longer. Go watch the game if you must, or just now's as good a time as ever, Mitch. Just, you know, it's 5 o'clock in the afternoon. Why not go to sleep when you've been awake since 10 a.m. yesterday? Really appreciate you doing this, man. That is some soldier level effort.
I love coming on with this. This is so much fun every week. You do a great job on the radio, so it's the least I can do.
I appreciate that, my friend, and we'll do it again next week, much better rested, and hopefully after another win. Thanks, Mitch. All right, that's Mitch Sichler, everybody, with us here on The Hoffman Show. I think, Anthony, at the very end there, Mitch's phone went to sleep. Mitch's phone was like, Mitch, you can stay awake and watch the game. I'm done.
Salute to him, man. That's tough.
That's brutal. I can't do that. I don't know how. I assume it's somewhere. Yeah, he said it was a 6 a.m. flight. I would have slept on the plane at the very least. Not that it's a super long flight from Cincinnati to here, but I would have then been like, I'm going to go back and go to bed.
Yeah, I mean, it ain't easy is what I'll say. But yeah, in the airport, on the plane, I would have, you know, got my little cat naps for sure.
Yeah, it's not the best sleep, but it's better than nothing. I think the worst, I have two that come to mind. There was one game that when I was working in Dallas, we played Seattle on like a Sunday night. And Seattle is so far away from everything. Like that Pacific, I don't think people realize how far north the Northwest is unless you spent significant time there. Like it's just so much far. Like we think of like New York City as north or even Boston as north. Seattle is so much farther north than both of those places. Like it is an uneven curve across the United States. And so we, you know, Sunday night you finish, it's West Coast time, but still by the time we flew back, like we landed at like 5 a.m. That stunk. And then there was a Monday night game here when I was on the beat in Philly, and my hotel was like 45 minutes away from the stadium. And I think initially, like JP Finley had a hotel room, and JP was like, I'm not going to use it. Here's my room key. It's much closer. I went, his room key didn't work. So I left and went to the hotel that I initially had, which was way far away. And yeah, it was like, I probably didn't go to sleep till after 3 that night. And then I probably had to be on with the junkies the next morning.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Those were the mornings when Drab would be like, hey, what time do you want to come on tomorrow? And I would go, 9:40. Your show ends at 10,
last
right?
Last segment
9:40. How does that sound? We'll end the show because that is the best chance of me being coherent. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app. When we get back, we're joined by our good friend Sherry Burris from the NFL Network.